Melanie Freeman has a story to tell about Haiti. Melanie is a photographer who recently traveled to Port-au-Prince with a team of journalists. The assignment was to report on conditions in Haiti on the one-year anniversary of that earthquake, which, as we know, caused such terrible devastation. Melanie was walking through the neighborhood of the ruined presidential palace one day when a woman holding a baby in one arm began to gesture with the other arm in a movement that clearly said, "Come over here, come this way, I want to talk to you or show you something." Melanie stopped and studied the shack which had been assembled to shelter this family in the midst of a crowded camp. She saw that in addition to a mother, the baby had a grandmother and two siblings all standing in the doorway watching her. "What do they want?" Melanie asked her translator. The guide walked over to the family and talked to the grandmother and then returned to Melanie explaining, "She wants you to take the baby home with you. She wants you to keep him." Melanie learned the baby's name was Stevenson, the mother was Nicole, and the grandmother was Rosemary. The baby's father was killed in the earthquake. The family has no source of income. There's not enough food and no sense of hope for a better future. It was instantly assumed upon getting just a glimpse of Melanie, whom they never had seen before, that this foreigner could provide a better life for baby Stevenson than his own family could. Melanie explained that she could not take the baby. It would not be permitted. There was no use even discussing it. But Rosemary wouldn't give up. "Hold him," she urged, thinking that in this way she could get Melanie to change her mind. "Hold him just for a minute." This story, says Mel, reveals pretty much everything there is to know about how the recovery's going in Haiti. And she's right. Often one story, one personal story, can convey the truth of a situation far more effectively than piles of data and statistics and detailed descriptive explanations ever could. So it is with today's story from the Gospel of Matthew, the story of Jesus on the top of a mountain with three of his followers. If we had to pick one story which reveals pretty much everything there is to know about Jesus, this might well be the one. Mark and Luke also wrote about this event, and so did Peter in his letters. Peter refers to this event, this moment, as a light shining in a dark place. Today we'll read it from Matthew. It's in chapter 17, verses 1 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun. His clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I'll make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came up and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." When they looked up, they saw Jesus alone, no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." We learn from this story that Jesus is profoundly connected to the history of his people. Jesus continues the tradition of Moses, who brought liberation, order and holiness to God's people. Jesus continues the tradition of Elijah, who also communed with God on a mountaintop and whose life was given to the purpose of inspiring faithfulness among God's people. We learn from a voice none other than God's emanating out of a bright cloud, which indicates God's presence, that Jesus is God's Son, precious and beloved, wonderfully pleasing to God, and someone that we're meant to listen to with deep respect and reverence. We're told to listen to Jesus, not just in the sense of hearing the words, but of taking them to heart and acting on what Jesus says. We learn that even in the midst of his life, Jesus is already conscious that there will be a death and a rising. From sacred history to echoes of baptism to glimpse of resurrection to a clear naming of Jesus' identity, it's all there in the story of the Transfiguration. There in the story as well are the disciples, confused at first, as we often are, and later fearful, as sometimes happens to us, and finally strengthened and empowered, just as we are meant to be. We learn that the disciples, among whom we might count ourselves, are eager to be of service. Peter expresses our desire to do something helpful. Let me build 3 shelters to honor and protect you while you meet, he offers, right before the bright cloud and the booming voice make clear that on this occasion, the disciples are meant not to keep busy, but to look and listen, striving to take in with all their being what God is trying to convey to them. When the disciples collapse in fear, we then discover one of the great gifts of Jesus is his physical presence as one of us. A human being who can walk over to where we're lying in a heap, reach out a hand and place it encouragingly on our head or our shoulder or our back, and speak to us in an ordinary voice saying, "Get up. Get up, friend, and do not be afraid." Finally, we learn through this story that Jesus alone is enough for us. After God's grandeur has receded, after Moses and Elijah have disappeared into the mist, after God's voice has shaken us to the core and we're trying to return to our senses, what is left is Jesus. Jesus himself alone. Jesus stays with us. And that's all we need. Jesus will lead us, tell us what we need to do, and what to avoid doing. Jesus has a unique and special relationship with God, which makes him utterly trustworthy. We can confidently put ourselves in his care. As Dietrich Bonhoeffer famously wrote in answer to the question, "What is the content of discipleship?" Jesus is the only content. There is no other content besides Jesus. He himself is it. Christ calls, the disciple follows. The disciples, in this case, Peter, James, and John, followed Jesus up the mountain, and they followed him down again. And as they come down from what we can only imagine is a mind-boggling and spirit-expanding episode, Jesus gives them an interesting commandment. "Don't tell anybody about this," he instructs, "until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." At first listen, this sounds a little bit like the ever-popular promise, "What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas." It sounds a little bit like Jesus doesn't want anybody else to know what the 3 select disciples have seen and heard on the mountain. But consider, Jesus did not say, "Don't tell anybody about this ever." He said, "Wait until the right time. Wait until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead before you start talking about this day on the mountain." Jesus knew already, of course, what we would all benefit from learning. Nothing we do actually stays in Vegas or anywhere else for that matter. What happened on the mountain was bound to go with the disciples, just as everything we do And everything that happens to us goes with us. It stays in our minds and in our hearts and even in our bodies. It becomes part of us from that moment forward. Jesus was simply asking the disciples to wait until the time when they would have a full and complete understanding of the meaning of the mountaintop event before they started telling other people about it. He didn't want Peter and James and John to come down the mountain that day boasting about how special they were because of what they had been allowed to see. He didn't want them to try to use their experience to gain power or authority for themselves. He knew that they hadn't yet really grasped what he had been trying to tell them for some time now about the suffering that was yet to come. He didn't want them to circulate a wrong interpretation of the message. He knew they needed more maturity, more experience, probably more humility, before they could see the revelation for what it was, a moment meant to offer clarity and encouragement in the hard days to come. So Jesus told them to wait. He wasn't worried that they were going to forget what they'd seen. He knew the magnitude of it would continue to reverberate with them, within them, and would always ultimately shape their response to his whole life, his death and his resurrection. He had no doubt that their encounter with God would remain with them and would make more sense, not less, as time went by. He was confident that if the story of the vision was shared at the right time and not before, it would bring light and hope to many, not just to the three who with their own eyes saw Jesus' face shine like the sun and with their own ears heard the very voice of God. It seems pretty evident that Peter, James, and John did not forget that sometime they must have begun to tell the story of what happened on the mountain. And when they told it, they were able to tell it just as it happened. They didn't try to embellish it or make themselves appear wise or clever or in control. "We might as well admit it," they said. "We had our faces in the dirt until Jesus touched us and said, 'Get up and don't be afraid.'" Get up and do not be afraid. It's a key conclusion to the messages which are meant to remain in the hearts of all disciples as a result of Jesus' transfiguration high on the mountain. Jesus belongs to God, is one with God, and is doing God's work. Moses and Elijah are Jesus' counselors. Our job is to listen to Jesus, get up, and do not be afraid. When we come to worship each week to this place set apart for the special activity of thinking about God and talking to God and offering ourselves to God, we are engaged in something not unlike the strenuous pilgrimage of Moses, of Elijah, of Jesus and the disciples when they set out for high places in search of a word from the Lord. It is not necessarily easy or obvious for us to leave our beds or our social life or our never-ending errands or whatever we might think of as the rewards of the week that we've been through. Yet we make the journey to a place, to this place where we hope the presence of God might dwell, because we long to be encouraged or clarified or set on fire by a glimpse of God's glory. We desire to receive God's instruction and God's guidance. We might have questions to ask or arguments to make. We want to know if there is still a light that can shine brightly enough to dazzle our eyes and awaken our spirits. We seek the affirmation that it is still possible to go on in faith. We're in good company here. This place, like the mountains of old, has been made sacred by the prayers and the footsteps of those who have gone before us and who have testified that God continues always to draw near to God's people. We are gathered on holy ground, and when we leave this place, what we have seen, what we have done and experienced here will go with us in forming our hearts and strengthening our spirits in the days to come. Eternal God, we hardly know how to speak to you or how to speak about you. But we know that any place where we encounter you is holy ground. We thank you for leading us step by step to the places you call us to go. Whether it's up the mountain or down the mountain or beside cool waters or into the valley of the shadow of death, we are aware that your grace alone is what makes it possible for us to go forward. We thank you for the touch of Jesus, who walks with us and always reminds us not to be afraid. Gathering our courage, we pray together as he taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.